The Weekend Podcast on Vox Markets with Justin, Peter and Steve. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
That disgusting noise, guttural mouth sound, is Steve chewing something that is highly appropriate, a highly appropriate foodstuff for Steve, I think. Pete, do you think it suits him very well? Do you think?
If you can think of
the funniest fruit around, the comedy fruit, then that's what Steve is chewing.
Yeah.
It's a banana. See? And that sort of suits Steve for some reason, because he's not far off a monkey, is he?
Well, thanks for the compliment to start the show. Yeah,
that's all right.
That's nice.
That's all right.
You're welcome.
You're quite hairy as well, Steve, aren't you?
Only on the legs.
Yeah, well, do you know what? If you've got his shorts on, it does look like monkey legs. And the fact that he's got thumbs on his feet as well, that, you know, sometimes he can't half climb a tree, Steve. Wow.
Yes.
Unbelievable. And have you seen it? It's a banana. God. Yeah.
You know, it's, and it's a big pink ass as well.
Yeah, he has to cut a hole in his jeans just to let it poke out, you know? Anyway, welcome to the Weekend Podcast. Started off on a very tasteful subject.
Hello!
Pete and Steve are here. Oh, Steve, Pete, I should say, it's a big weekend for the English, isn't it?
It is, isn't it? Eh?
Isn't it, see? Yes. Mm. Let's be honest here. And I realise I've been looking at this from the wrong angle, I suppose. I've been looking at it as a Welsh person, quite jealous we're not in the World Cup. To be fair, right, it's not a good team. It's not an exceptional team, is it? But they've got to a level where, you know, they're three games away from winning the World Cup, you know?
Yeah.
And I suppose the point is, technically, they don't have to be the best team. All they have to do is win it, win the next game. And by hook or by crook, it's up to them. They have the passion, the drive, the fight, the dog in them, or the three lions in them to win that. You know, can they do it? I mean, Tunisia, Panama, and they've lost against Belgium. Let's be honest, who are a half-decent team. And then they had, and people say, oh, yeah, but it's England's B team. Yeah, it was Belgium's B team as well.
Yeah.
So there we are. And did they win against
Colombia.
Colombia. They were dirty, weren't they?
Unbelievably dirty. And how FIFA haven't fined them yet, or I haven't heard if they have, but unbelievable. I mean, that's, ridiculous. But anyway, the main thing was we won. And I totally agree with you that we're not a special team, but that's, I think, part of the secret. I came into it thinking with very low expectations. I thought we might get to the quarterfinals and we'd probably be playing Germany. And the way things turned out, because Germany, bye-bye, went home, it's Sweden. So you go, well, there's a little chance we could get into the semi-final then. So that's interesting, exciting. And I think Gareth Southgate has just done an amazing job. I think it's a brilliant job in terms of management and bringing the best out of a bunch of pretty good, but not perhaps world-class players. And it's very exciting and it's great. I'm just gutted that Steve is not even into football at all and just can't buy into the World Cup. I just think, wow, you're missing out on an amazing sporting event. But anyway.
Oh, no, I did tune in to watch the penalty kickouts the other day.
The penalty kickouts, that's it.
And the only reason I did, to be fair, is because they delayed Love Island by an hour, so I had to kind of watch it early.
Okay, well
they literally delayed it by half an hour, and then because of the penalty, whatever they're called, they delayed it by another half hour.
Stephen, you have got to take a long, hard look at yourself. Deary me.
Yeah, Steve, do you know what? You've got to, I mean, I do get annoyed. This diving really does put it off for me.
Yes.
Really annoying. England,
I think, have been very good. Jordan Henderson let himself down a little bit, I thought, a little bit of play acting, but otherwise, I think we've been quite exemplary, really. And I have to say, Colombia, Neymar is a disgrace. It's unbelievable.
And the thing is, I watched my son, obviously, Fred, now, and they're into it. You know, they're really tense, and they couldn't watch the penalties and all that for England.
Oh, yeah, that's brilliant.
I know, but Fred, right, is like, he thinks rolling around now is quite fine. He said, I do that, actually. I do that. I said, Fred, don't ever do that. I'll never, ever, ever watch you ever again in football match, ever, if you do that. Yeah. Yeah, and he said, stop doing that, that's what you do. And he thinks that's what you do. So it's acceptable. Now, you say about low expectations. Yes, they'd started off with low expectations, but I do feel now you've overcompensated for that, the English now. Everything I see is it's coming home, it's coming home. I think, wait, hang on a sec. You've beaten Tunisia, Panama, and Colombia. Yeah. You know, don't start saying it's coming home. That is a definition of blind faith. It's not bad because, do you know what? I look at it from a general positivity view, and I think England, listen, at the moment, they've been, an extra $3 billion has been spent. I've seen people buying merchandise, like rubbish screwdrivers with the English flag on. And I think if it's good for the economy, it's good for all of us, you know. And I think that this weekend's game, 3 o'clock Saturday, couldn't be better placed. The place will come to a standstill. Most people have the days off on a Saturday, or a lot of people, so the beers are in, the barbecue's on, and I just think today or Saturday alone will be good for the economy. Absolutely amazing for the economy. And I'm just thinking,
I totally understand what you mean by, you know, getting a bit carried away with the coming home thing and all of that stuff. But it's like, come on, dare to dream. It's part of the fun of it is actually thinking. And it might be shattered on Saturday. By 5 o'clock, we might be out of the World Cup, and that's our world. There we go. And I thought we came close on Tuesday night, didn't we? In Colombia. It was just, oh, they've scored in the 99th minute or whatever. And it's like, oh, you know, it's just same old England, unfortunately. But we got through it, won a penalty shootout. Let's just dare to dream for a bit. And come on, Wales would do exactly the same in this position, or anyone else. And it's great. And that's what makes sport so brilliant. So
it does bring out the worst in some people, though, let's be honest.
Of course, unfortunately. But what's been great is there's been no crowd trouble or reported crowd trouble or anything like that. Man alive, against Colombia, I was getting riled, and I'm pretty passive, and I was sat on my sofa. But, you know, it's good, isn't it, that hopefully perhaps we might be past that era, and, you know, we can actually just enjoy sport for what it is. And yes, I agree, some people get carried away too much, but that you'll get that in every country. It's just humans, unfortunately. But
yeah, do you know what? The thing I don't like about football is basically that I understand these people are way overpaid compared to what they actually do. You know, like I said, for the money they get paid, you can buy an unmortgaged decent house a week on their salary, you know? And I just think for that kind of money, I'd expect them to score a goal without even touching the ball. I expect their powers to be that great. And they're not. They're not. Yeah, it's completely.
Yeah,
you
know, but that's just an economy, isn't it?
I know. But hang on, compounded with that, then I see them rolling around trying to get penalties. I just think, you're cheating, mate. You're playing this big and paid this money. Get up and play the game properly, for heaven's sake. You're not being paid to act.
The South Americans have been particularly bad this time. And yes, there is a little bit elsewhere. But it would be great if no one did that, and that FIFA perhaps should do something more about that. But
in my head, I think, how can we solve that? They're not paid to act; they're paid to play football. You know, and that's what I want to solve. Anyway, let's get on stocks because people listening are probably thinking, "Do you talk about stocks and shares?" So we're more than halfway through the year, and it's been a struggle. I feel sorry that Paddy couldn't come on the podcast. He works on a Friday, and we're recording this on a Friday before market close. Paddy started, I think, when Steve sort of started. He started with a really hard, bumpy road, you know. And I think you started, Steve, just investing when, I think, in January, February, was it 2 years ago maybe, we had our worst start of the year ever, or the S&P 500 in America, which is the widely used stock, worst start ever. And that year, we ended up, you know. And so you ended up with less of a loss than at the start of the year. And it seems grim. But that's why a lot of people lose money in investing, especially in small caps, you know. They sort of put the money in and they despair, beyond despair, and they invest in the wrong stuff. But then it doesn't, and they lose money, they cash out. But like I said, I mean, it will come. I mean, I always believe in the pendulum effect. And I keep saying this about anything in life. You know, it's about waves. It's about just going one way, then the other. We had the beast from the east start of the year, coldest year ever. Now we've got the heat wave of the year. You know, unbelievable. This weather is phenomenal, isn't it? My grass is dead outside. You know, everything's there. And it feels like I'm in Spain. It's really hot. And I'm thinking, we've gone from the coldest winter to the warmest summer. Now, that happens in the stock market. It happens. Things go from one side to the other. And I believe, you know, we'll have some kind of breakthrough on Brexit or something will happen sooner or later, and Trump will wind his neck in with trade and we'll fly. But I do believe we are a year or so away from a recession. I think that, but there we are.
just throw that in casually at the end there.
But not a recession, I think a big dip. We have to have a correction. It's been like 10 years of a bull market. It's ridiculous. And if we have 10 years of a bull market, it's like the harder you drink on a night out, you know, the sore your head will be the next day. You know, that's the same kind of analogy. So I do think we're in for a kind of correction sooner or later. But generally thinking, I think it'll have to come from left field because the economy seems quite strong at the moment because we are in, I think they were saying, this trade you know, problems having a trade war, because Friday Trump did, you know, midnight Washington time, I think it was $34 billion worth of tariffs they're imposing on China, and China said they will reciprocate. So where will this end? You know, and then Donald Trump said again, if you reciprocate, I'll put $200 billion worth of tariffs on, and $200 billion more if you reciprocate on that. So they literally said ridiculous, childish game that Trump likes to play. So I wonder where this will stop. But that apparently has stopped the synchronization of global growth. For the first time ever, pretty much, all big economies will be growing at the same time. So apparently that's going to put a spanner in the works, you know, so it's quite annoying. But anyway, I don't know if you saw recently, commodities and, of course, looking at AIM companies, the big explosion. Do you know what's annoying? I missed out on buying a company, right? AOR, AOR Tech. And they did a big fundraiser. It was some good signs that I've seen before. The market cap was about $2 or $3 million. They're going to raise $2.5 million, and they'd had backing. When that happens, right, for their sort of patented valves in their heart, they do valves and sort of in their hearts and stuff like that. It's a biotech company. Like I said, there's three companies you should look at, or sectors you should look at for explosive growth, and that's biotech, tech, and resource companies on AIM. And I went to buy. I logged into Barclays, which is not easy for me at the moment because I had a lot of problems with it. It took about six times to log in. I went to the buy page. I put my amount in. I had the quote. Went to hit buy, and I thought, oh, I've got too many stocks. I should be selling stocks rather than buying stocks. I've got too many stocks. I'm just buying again. I should rather than buy a new stock, I should just try and buy more of the stock I got. I didn't buy. That was at 34 pence. Today, as I'm looking, and this was like literally a week ago. Today, as I'm looking, they are 34 pence. I didn't buy them at. They're now 80 pence.
Ouch.
Quite annoying, isn't it, that? So
That is annoying. And, you know, good of you to share that, because that's what we can all relate to that, I think, can't we?
Yes. So So that's biotech is like that. Certain, the more you do this thing, there's certain flags that get thrown up to you, and I like their patented stuff that's been used around the world, and it's and in fact, as they did a fundraise, there was high demand on that fundraise, and it wasn't a huge discount, it wasn't a massive discount. I thought there's something going on here, and they've announced a couple of patents since that, and a deal. And I do think AOR, if it pulls back massively, is one worth watching out for. And I very rarely talk about stocks I don't own in the podcast, but that's one that got away and I missed. Anyway, one to look out for. I mean, longer-term trends you should all look for, you know. And the fact that Rio Tinto, which traditionally, you know, don't do copper, they do iron, all that stuff. But Rio Tinto are on the lookout for copper companies. And they said if they can't get a big company, they're going to look for a little smaller companies. That says everything in my eyes, you know. They are looking for copper because they know copper's going to be scarce with the EV revolution, and the fact that, you know, like I said, generally, growing economies like, you know, the Far East and companies, some of the Middle East, or traditionally growing companies, developing nations are, you know, becoming more industrialized. That means they're using more copper, pretty much generally. So even without the EV revolution, they'd be using more copper because it's in everything. Now you've got EV come along. China's obviously one of the biggest developers of EV vehicles. Copper grades are going down. Before, the grade people would be looking for was 1%, some of that, at a decent sort of depth and not too deep. But now they're struggling to even get 0.5%. So you see, you know, good quality plays are hard. And looking at Asia Met at the moment, you know, we've been a long-term holder of Asia Met. Pretty much almost 10 baggers come back a bit. But they've got a very decent, you know, copper project there. Excellent copper project. And I was just chatting, actually, Sasha was pointing out, he said, at the moment, the going rate for takeovers pretty much on copper companies is 12, between 12 and 14 cents, I think it's per pound, around about that, in the ground. And this would value Asia Met at around about 600 billion. So there's still potential upside. That's why I always like this strategy I have. And, you know, of getting in early, de-risking, and then holding for a long time. Because most people will never see a 10-bagger because they get, especially on AIM, they get in and out, take their 50%, 20%, whatever they do. But, you know, my strategy is look for 10-baggers. You know, look for companies that have the potential of 10-bag, and then de-risking early, but letting that story play out if nothing changes. Because I've had three 10-baggers now, Asia Met, EVRH, and VRS. And like I said, I've done the same with all three of them. And I'll let them stay, you know, bubble away in the portfolio now for years and years. And if the story doesn't change, I'm happy to hold forever. Because you never know what's going to happen at Asia Met. They could get taken out, you know.
And currently market cap of 93 million. So yeah, like you say,
that's, you know, if
a value could be 600 million, then yeah.
And they are further de-risking their. So the bigger guys will not like to come into a project too early. They don't have to. The closer they can get to production and buy, they will. So Asia Met are de-risking. They're going to feasibility study now, of course. So it'll be
and
good.
And this is something we've spoken about before. It's like obviously going back to a stock that, you know, we've done well at in, and then it has come back. But like we're saying, there's potential there. It's not something I've done before, but you start looking at it and go, yeah, rather than constantly trying to reinvent the wheel, finding a new company, it's like, well, actually, is it time to buy some more in Asia Met? And actually, if something I could take over was to happen, we could make a sizable upside from this position.
Well, let us look at the story. It's back now, touching the 200-day moving average. You've got guys, big institutions that go in the fundraiser. I think higher than this, wasn't it? I think last fundraiser was higher than where we are now. I think another attempt, what was it? I think it was, wasn't it? I'll check. But I just think it looks excellent, you know, so yeah. From this level. So it's one of those, I mean, that's copper there. They came in a feasibility study, of course. I mean, there's more riskier plays than that. You know, they've got copper, like I said, BZT, Bizant Resources. Massive. Mm. 3.7 billion of free cash flow could be produced, within the scoping study revealed. And yet they are like, 5 million market cap. So that's copper as well. But of course, it's in Philippines. It's what's called a questionable jurisdiction. There's been a couple of problems there. But again, you know, you pay your money, you take your choice there. Like I said, what's the downside there? That massive asset, what is the downside? And it's worth looking at. I just think, what else? Anything else looking at?
One RNS that caught my eye this morning on Friday was ECR Minerals.
Yeah.
I don't know if you saw that one. That's one of my strategic buys, if you remember. You boys opted not to buy, if you remember. And I might have forgotten to cancel a buy order and accidentally bought some. And I've been underwater ever since, really. But, they've sort of discovered a bit of gold in their asset down there in Australia. And, you know, I'm getting close now with a 26% rise today to almost breaking even. So that's exciting.
Well done, Peter.
Thank you, Steve.
I've got to say with ECR, where are the grades in there? The last time they had grades, they weren't very good. Right? And I've got to say, where are the grades? I want to see the grades. That's what I want to see. Right. They said they discovered a strike length thing. If you look at, I hold Cora Gold, right? Their grades have been cut out. And do you remember the sort of benchmark when you know it's a compelling gold? What to look for grades-wise? Do you remember what I said?
Orange colour. That's
it.
Let's go on, Steve. That's it.
An orange colour, the gold.
Orange colour gold. That's it. That's it. That's it. Perfect.
Well done, Steve.
That's all you need to look for. Yeah. Is it so when you get an RNS come out, they didn't mention orange anyway, did they?
Yeah.
No, so to look for a compelling, decent grade and thing, what you look for is 20 gram meters, all right?
Right.
So what something will give you is they'll give you, when they release some grades, they will say, we have so-and-so grams per ton at this length intercept. So they'll say, we've drilled. So there's how many things are in there? So they'll say what depths they've drilled at, all right? What intercept, that means how much have they've found the grammage have in there. So let's say they drilled to 100 meters. They'll say between, say, 10 and 20 meters down, so that's a 10-meter intercept, all right? They'll say we discovered, say, 2 grams per ton. That would be a 20-gram meter, because what you got there is 10 meters... of the 100 meters, 10 meters, you got of the 100 meters, and they've got, say, 2 grams. So you got 10 meters, 2 grams, 2 times 10 is 20 meter grams. So that's good. So, and they'll say on that drill as well, further down at, say, 60 meters, we got, say, 20 meters worth at 1 gram. And that's also a 20 gram meter, see, because it's 20 grams. And it's so those are what's called intercepts. So obviously they won't be intercepting. So there's veins running through this.
ECR have given that in their RNS today.
Have they?
If you scroll down a bit, have.
On. Let me have a look.
Shall I read? Intercepts of 5.45 metres at 0.12 grams per tonne. That's Aussies. Is it Aus? Yeah. From 33.95 metres and 10 metres at 0.16 grams per tonne.
Right. Are they getting 20 gram metres?
So what are you saying? 10 meters at 0.16. Are you saying that's one? Are you saying that's 16?
So 5.5 meters, right, would have to be at 4 grams per ton, wouldn't it? A 20 meter thing.
I see, right, yes. No, well, no, they're not.
33 metres, and so that's the first two are not from 43 metres obtained from during Falterstorm. So the samples and interceptor 3. No, that's not there. 24 metres from 20, including 2.7 metres of one. You know, see, that doesn't make the grade, does it?
I don't know. So, to be honest, obviously, this was one of those kind of random purchases that I've made. I don't know enough about it, and I shouldn't really be in it. But this is interesting to listen to you and actually start to understand how to assess the value of something.
Now, you've got grades, right? And then you've got what companies are hoping to achieve. Now, for gold, it's quite good. What, for a standalone mine, you're looking at about 1 million ounces resource. You know, so you've got 1 million ounces of resource. Not all that will convert into mineable gold. So they reckon about, hopefully, when you've got a resource, you've proved up a resource there, you're hoping to get around about 1 million ounces, then you start thinking about building a mine. It's worth it. It's viable to build a mine. About 65% of that is convertible. Upper end, say 85%. You know, so you're looking at, say mid. So you're looking at, from 1 million, you're probably going to get 700,000 ounces, and so you divide that, you know, say over a 10-year period, 70,000 a year, or, you know, ideally you're looking at 100,000 ounces a year, and at around about a level of costing you $800 per ton, you can sell that for around about $1,250. So you can see, and so yeah, so but you need strike length as well. So when you get these intercepts, you're looking for 1 million. But if you look at Kora Gold, they're looking at a 14-kilometer strike length. That means these anomalies and mineralizations are in veins, you know, so not just on their own, they are normally along a vein going east to west, southwest, and they're going to try and find these and work out the strike of where it is, what distance, what which angle it's at, and all this stuff. And so the longer the strike length, the better for them, of course, so they can just go along the strike length and they don't have to waste their time drilling around everywhere, and hopefully it's some kind of, you know, conformed, you know, it conforms to some kind of shape and distance, you know, conformity. So that's why it doesn't cost them. So that's good. Mm. But, I mean, we'll
see. Can I just say, I'm just rereading it. When I said Aussie, I was thinking it was, we're talking about value of money, but it, AU, isn't it? So that's gold. I remember that from GCSE chemistry. So, yes, I understand. I know. I was reading it. So Aussie, I thought that was going to be Aussie dollars, that we're talking value. We are. I understand it now. We are talking about grams per ton.
Yeah, and, grams per ton. Yeah, and pretty much, you know, when you get to like anything like oil or gold, it's always in dollars as well. So you know, it's worth looking at. So yeah, grams. I was thinking, what do you mean Aussie?
I thought it was doing grams per ton, and then it was going to say how much that's valued at. No, right.
Kora Gold is one of my five, I think, will outperform this year. If not, it's a long... Someone asked me actually on Twitter saying, yeah, what about 5 years' time? And I said, well, same kind of list. Because, I mean, I'm not a six-month, you know, trader or three-month trader. I mean, Kora Gold is one of those ones I think will be triple-digit market cap in about 2-3 years' time. And we're now sitting at, what, 9 million? So... Definitely, it's got the grade, it's got the asset, it's got the management, it's got the money backing behind it, it's got everything. It's a very impressive outfit. It's very under the radar.
Run me by those figures again. So, Kora Gold's intercepts.
I'll show you Kora Gold. So, let me just go through Kora Gold's last set of intercepts, right? Yes, but I understand it. Total volume rights. Where is it? Appointment jump broker. Company holdings. Just going down. High grade zones at San and Cora. This is there. So I'll just go through this again, so you can pick up on this. So they got 34 meters at 2.5 grams. So times 34 times the intercept length at 34 times 2.5. What is that?
2.5 grams per ton.
Yeah. So 72. Yeah,
82.
Yeah, so exactly. No. We're only looking for 20.
No, hold on. 34 is 68, and plus 17 is it's 85, isn't it?
Yeah, and we're looking for 20. The next one, including 23 meters at 3.3 grams. Look at that. 23 right. times 3.3. That's, I know, 63 metres at point not 1, so that's over 20 as well, including 18, it's 1.3. It's all there. It's all there, isn't it?
Yeah.
Including three.
Yeah, that's impressive. Right. Okay.
Yeah. So, and that's, I mean, and that's their flagship. But the other one, which is like close to Hummingbird Resources, that had fantastic grades as well, unbelievable grades. And like I said, Hayden Locke came on, who's the business development manager, said that initial drill at the Tekladuku one, which has not been drilled before, pretty much, he said is reminiscent of Papillon mine, which he's involved with as well, initial drill results. And Papillon is a 5 million ounce. Resource, which is five times as big as you need to make a decent mine. So he's saying even their second one is quite good. And what happened with that is Hummingbird down the road from that with their own mine, they probably won't need to build a mine for that. So just truck it off to Hummingbirds, who are 34% holder of Core as well. Truck it off to them, and they'll do some kind of deal. Either maybe Hummingbird may even buy that bit off them, or they'll just pay them for the processing and all that stuff. So it's ideal. You know, I really like it. I like it a lot.
And then does the depth of it that has an effect on obviously how easy it is to get out of the ground? Does it?
It does. I mean, obviously, it's shallow and broad. So these are let me just go there. So degrees at 70. So below, right? And then, Steve, you keep this in mind because I'll test you later. So listen, below 100 meters is called.
It sounds like Steve's playing with his like rattle,
thing. Okay. So below 100 meters is known as shallow, right? Anything below 100 meters is shallow, right? From 100 to say 600, in fact, depends what you're looking at. But 100 to 300, is again not shallow but not deep. 300, 600 again. Below, anything lower than 600, but you know, more than 600 is quite deep, you know. But sometimes you get better grades deeper you go. It depends on the formation. And so it makes it worthwhile. So if you're going deep, you need to get very decent high grades, you know, because it costs a lot more money to get down there. So when you get the obviously best combination, of course, is high grade shallow, because you don't have to dig there. So if you get high grade shallow.
Are you saying high grade is 20 grams?
20 gram meter, yeah. So if you get 20 meters at 1 gram per ton, that's decent. Or 10 grams at 2 grams per ton. Or 5 grams at 4 grams per ton. So that kind of thing there, that's good.
And then if it's less than 100 meters depth, then
that's decent.
Bingo,
yeah, very good.
Bingo bango.
Yeah, exactly. So that's the combo.
So when you say they find gold, and sometimes they say some of it's not usable, when you said there's 1 million ounces and they can only use 700 ounces of it, why can't they use the other 300 ounces?
So it's a conversion rate. So it's almost like saying, you know that's in there, but of course, the way you sort of process it is like, everything's pretty much crushed, you know, you crush it, whenever you process any ore, so you basically dig out rock, you're not going to get big chunks just falling out of the ground, you know, you shovel it out and you get big gold nuggets falling out. That doesn't happen. It's obviously within the rock, you know, or within the ore. So you take it along, you process it, you crush it, and metallurgy works. So the different ways of separating it. So in that separation process, you're going to lose. You're not going to get 100% conversion, you know. So you're going to lose some. Right. Some gold will go with the other bits you throw out. It's like, Steve, as an analogy, if I go through your recycling bin, I'll find a little few bits in there. Or if I go through your normal bin, I may find some recyclable bits in there, you know?
That's it.
So you're not 100% clean on your recycling, are you? 100% clean on your waste,
so
you know?
Have they not discovered, like, magnets? It's called
There we are, Steve. No, it's not.
Okay.
So there's different ways to use cyanide, is sometimes used. There's gravitational, so it's flotation, which just floats to the top. There's weight or gravitational sort of extraction, or there's chemical extraction. So there's all different kinds of extraction. And those, again, the metallurgy, the work, it depends on the cost. You know, sometimes if it's just flotation, it's very cheap, of course, because all it's doing is floating, separating. If you have to use chemicals, they cost money, of course. So there's all different kinds of ways of separating, sort of mineralization or commodities or the, you know, sort of these kind of things, a copper, gold, whatever, that you have to look at. So different types of, you know, depends what they're in. If they're in quartz or something, if they're located, you know, again, it makes it's another complication. But you realise, how do these people discover this? How do they do this? How do they know to separate these things? Because it's not easy. Because if you get my son, you know, Fred, like, he was obsessed with, what do you call them, little stones that have sparkles in them and stuff like that. I said, yeah, it was some kind of quartz or...
Quartz, isn't it?
Gemstones and that, but it's about separating it. It's like, you know, diamond stuff. That's even harder because you don't want to crush the diamond, but you have to somehow get them out of the rock. So it's all kinds of, you know, it's a very technical way of doing it. But, yes, so essentially, the way of processing them and separating them from the surrounding ore body costs money, and the way you do it, you will obviously lose some of it, you know, when you do that. So because when they do core a diamond core drilling, they drill down and it's like a cutting, sort of something like a circular cutter, and it'll cut almost like a cylinder straight out, and it'll drag it straight out. So it's taking an intersection out of the rock exactly how it was, so they can see it in there, and they'll test that and say, oh, that's 2 grams per ton there, but you may not even get that much out, you know. It'll be a 20% loss factor, you know. So that's why that happens. Anyway, quickly.
That's good.
Yeah, quickly. Listen, I've written about EUZ. There's a lot of interest on Friday for Europa Metals, EUZ. This is one of my top picks for the year. And I've said this over and over again. If you aren't getting the story, watch a couple of videos that Lawrence has done talking about it. And I quite like it's refreshing. Every CEO again in the podcast talks about being undervalued. And he says, I'm not going to say about being undervalued at all. He said, we'll bring out the scoping study, then you'll see what the potential is here. And he said, I did a comparison with another company recently on a blog of mine, a company in Poland with a zinc lead asset, and pretty much the exact metal in the ground, 3.56 billion of value of metal in the ground, but their resource was a bit smaller than Europa's, but their scoping study showed pretty much a net present value of $170 million, which is $128 million, and yet I think it was around about, 41 million free cash flow a year. And if you look at that, it's ridiculous compared to the market cap of EUZ. They've got us of what, just under $1 million to develop the asset in Spain, which is also, if you look at, not a dodgy jurisdiction, first world country. And look at that, check it out. I think honestly, by the end of the year, I'll be surprised if this isn't closer towards 10 million market cap, which is 3 times where we are at the moment. And that's a cracking return, but that is just going into the first level of this re-rate valuation creation process, which is the scoping study, and then you go into pre-feasibility, then feasibility. And like I said, we've seen that with Asia Met, and now I think Horizonte going through this. Horizonte, though, the price hasn't reacted as fast. Horizonte is going to be taken out. I think Horizonte will be taken out because, you know, Wood Mackenzie, one of the biggest sort of operators in this space, they've come up with, they reckon nickel, right, will be £27,000 per tonne in the next few years to come. At the moment, do you know what it is, Steve? What's the price of nickel at the moment, Steve?
It's around 40p at the moment.
40p per ton.
P, that's it. Yeah, British currency. Yeah.
So nickel is just under 14,000, and they expect it to be 27,000. So almost doubling. And that was that's
what, 27,000?
Yeah.
Dollars.
$27,000 per ton. And so if you look at the metrics on Horizonte Mineral, on even their model of $14,000, it's phenomenal. It's creating a billion, almost 80 million post-tax profit per year, 80 million per year on $14,000 per ton.
Wow.
Wood Mackenzie has got up to 27 million tons. So I think they'll go through the roof and go crazy. I think Horizon. Or they'll be taken out. It's too cheap. At the moment, they're too cheap. And people be looking around for nickel projects to be too cheap. Talao, very quiet at the moment, isn't it? I think that something's going to happen there. I think if you look on the Botswana government site of Talao, they are got the request for proposal out there, being advertised. So I think something's going to happen there very soon. Again, I don't understand UOG. What's going on with UOG? That's a phenomenal amount of value in their sort of assets and investments they've taken. They've got Graham Martin, who's, you know, like he took help take to, you know, Tullo from nothing to a FTSE 100 company nearly on the board there doing. I think more deals will come here. I think this will be, you know, of course they're limited by the money, but maybe they'll be doing deals some other way. But Brian keeps saying he'll be doing deals in a clever way. I think this will be the kind of company he'll be doing. Several, once they get one success and get, you know, money coming board, the share price going up, I think they'll be doing deals, several deals a year. Or, you know, and I just think it's one of those companies, again, we look back on, again, another one of the companies I think will be top performers this year. I think we'll look back on this in a year's time and think, wow, do you remember that was down at like a 12 million market cap? That was nuts. And Apple Resources as well, still the land. Anything else worth chatting about, guys? Oh, I've got to mention Infrastrata. Are you in Infrastrata? Any dips, I'd say, have a look at that. Research that. It's Infrastrata is a gas storage project.
What is the ticker code, Justin? And I will do my own research.
Infra. as if you're in for this, in for that. INFA. Essentially, they're developing a gas storage project. There was only one gas storage project around called Rough that's been shut down. So it's you know, we need this. It's called a project of national importance, and the government have recognised this. And we'll be able to hold 25% of the UK gas storage, and they're going to look to build that. They've got some really big companies coming and help them, you know, to do this what's called front engineering design project, and it's almost like the scoping study on a resource company, and that's been undertaken right now. They have the cash to do that, and I think this will re-rate once that comes out and showing that the economics at the moment for 20-year project, their net present value is 67 million. They're a sub 5 million market cap company, but like I said, once this feed is done and these studies are done, I think that will improve that even further, and I think they'll push that figure up even further. But like I said, they think there'll be a 40-year life on this project as well, which will obviously improve that. BT, should we mention BT, which is it's looking quite good, isn't it, at the moment?
Yeah, well, it's had a bit of a recovery.
What's your thoughts on BT, Steve?
Well, I'm still not overly happy, but yeah, it's obviously getting better.
On your Harry Larry accounts there, what's it looking like?
I'm still on minus 9.45, so obviously I'll be happier when that's naught and above.
What, you're on minus less than 1% down?
No, 9.45%.
Oh, 9.45, sorry, 9.45.
I'm like 17% down.
Okay, yeah, I'm a bit more on that. But I quite like, it still is, right, it's now just touching this 125 moving average, right? Which it needs to get above that. So last two times it's failed to get above this 125 moving average. Lots of times it's rallied, and that was back in, let me just look at that. That was back in May. It rallied, didn't get above that. And back in January, tried to get above that, didn't get above that. And in December, three times, tried to get above it, didn't get above that. So if it gets above that, that's the next milestone. That's very good. Technical milestone, it's very good. And hopefully, it announces CEO, you know, maybe that'll help. But, I just think the fact that the chairman's been loading up at around about two quid odd, it says a lot, you know. He's not going to get it wrong, is he? Several hundred thousand pounds worth. Anyway, that's it. I'm run out of things. Anything else worth chatting about?
No, nothing that I can think of, really.
Steve, any plans for the weekend, Steve?
No, a little bit of a working weekend. There's a bit of a food and drink festival in Cardiff, so I might go and
The football, Steve. Steve, four games of football to watch.
Yes, just the food and drink festival, really. Yeah.
Right. Okay. Fine.
Yeah. That'll. Although I did hear there's going to be a pizza shortage over the weekend, and I didn't have a pizza on Saturday because of the football, so maybe that might be a bit of a disaster on my side.
I love Steve's food routines. Oh, pizza. Saturday, yes, that's pizza day.
Why is it a pizza shortage? How can there be a pizza shortage?
Well, because everyone's buying pizza for the football.
Oh, okay.
Right.
Why don't you just make your own?
Yeah.
Well, I usually do. Well, I say I make my own. I go to the supermarket and they make them for me. But
in fact, that's nothing like making your own, is it, really? I wash my own car. I say wash my own car. What I do is I pull up to one of those Polish guys and say, fellas, can you wash the car? I wash my car on the weekends, always.
Yeah. I always do my own MOT. I take it to the garage and the guy says, do the MOT. I do it, yeah.
I always do everything from scratch in my house, cooking-wise. When I said that, what I do, I go to the supermarket, buy a prepaid microwave meal, pop it in the microwave and do that. But I put it on the plate and stuff and eat it, you know? So it's always from scratch.
Anyway. Handmade, that's probably the way I meant to say, not homemade.
Yeah, handmade, not by me, though. Right. Exactly. Good. Right, lovely, guys. Thanks so much for that. I'm going to go.
Yes, indeed. Bye-bye. Good luck, England.
The Weekend Podcast on Vox Markets with Justin, Peter and Steve. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.